following video is based on the book Anunnaki Chronicles, written by Janet Sitchin. This thought-provoking book reveals an insider's look into the decades of research behind Zechariah Sitchin's work, as well as an in-depth overview of his theories and discoveries. As archaeologists study the origins of mankind and our first civilizations, evidence points to Sumer in Mesopotamia as the place where advanced civilization began. And yet, the ancient, extremely sophisticated culture of Sumeria is as startling as it is mysterious, where it seemed to appear fully formed as if from nowhere. How did this advanced society arise, and what civilizations predated it? Zechariah Sitchin discusses this in Chapter 2 of his first book, The 12th Planet. We begin with the kingdoms of Babylon and Assyria, which evolved in ancient Mesopotamia well before the time of Christ. The Babylonian and Assyrian cultures flourished circa 1900 BC and lasted roughly 1500 years. These two kingdoms were preceded by a kingdom named Akkad. The deeper that scholars delved, the more it became obvious that this kingdom of Akkad was a rich root culture, an element of which was a pre-Akkadian language, the first written language that came to be called Sumerian. In this chapter, Sitchin walks us through the various accomplishments and technological and artistic prowess of the Sumerian culture, which encompassed the disciplines of mathematics, architecture, metallurgy, and medicine, and medical procedures, just to name a few. The level of unparalleled sophistication found across the board is inexplicable, unless one entertains the idea that these ancient peoples may have inherited their advanced knowledge from a very sophisticated culture or cultures that predated them. Using ancient texts to back up his ever-expanding line of questioning, Sitchin looks at the early, enigmatic origins of civilization in southern Mesopotamia. Narrated by David Carroll, in this new series on the Fifth Kind, we will explore the research, translations, and context of these controversial publications. If you would like your own paperback copy of the original work, please check out our affiliate publisher links within the video description.
For a long time, Western man believed that his civilization was the gift of Rome and Greece. The Greek philosophers themselves wrote repeatedly that they had drawn on even earlier sources. Later on, travelers returning to Europe reported the existence in Egypt of imposing pyramids and temple cities half buried in the sands. When Napoleon arrived in Egypt in 1799, he took with him scholars to study and examine these ancient monuments. One of his officers found near Rosetta a stone slab on which was carved a proclamation from 196 BC. Written in hieroglyphs as well as in two other scripts, the decipherment of the ancient Egyptian language and the archaeological efforts that followed revealed to Western man that a high civilization had existed in Egypt well before the advent of the Greek civilization. Egyptian records spoke of royal dynasties that began circa 3100 BC, two full millennia before the beginning of the Hellenic civilization, reaching its maturity in the 4th and 5th centuries BC. Greece was a latecomer, not an originator. Was the origin of our civilization then actually from Egypt? As logical as that conclusion would have seemed, the facts militated against it. Greek scholars did describe visits to Egypt, but the ancient sources of knowledge of which they spoke were found elsewhere. The pre-Hellenic cultures of the Aegean Sea, the Minoan on the island of Crete, and the Mycenaean on the Greek mainland revealed evidence that the Near Eastern, not the Egyptian, culture had been adopted. Syria and Anatolia, not Egypt, were the principal avenues through which an earlier civilization became available to the Greeks. noting that the Dorian invasion of Greece and the Israelite invasion of Canaan took place at about the same time, circa the 13th century BC. Scholars have been fascinated to discover a growing number of similarities between the Semitic and Hellenic civilizations. Professor Sirius H. Gordon, author of Forgotten Scripts, Evidence of the Minoan Language, opened up a new field of study by showing that an early Minoan script called Linear A represented a Semitic language. He concluded that the pattern, as distinct from the content of the Hebrew and Minoan civilizations, is the same to a remarkable extent, and pointed out that the island's name Crete, spelled in Minoan, Kereta, was the same as the Hebrew word Kerehet, walled city, and had a counterpart in a Semitic tale of a king of Keret. Even the Hellenic alphabet, from which the Latin and our own alphabets derive, came from the Near East. The ancient Greek historians themselves wrote that a Phoenician named Cadmus brought with them the alphabet, comprising the same number of letters in the same order as in Hebrew. It was the Greek alphabet when the Trojan War took place. That the Greek and Latin writing, and thus the whole foundation of our Western culture, were adopted from the Near East can easily be demonstrated by comparing the order, names, signs, and even numerical values of the original Near Eastern alphabet with the much later ancient Greek and more recent Latin. Scholars were aware, of course, of Greek contacts with the Near East in the first millennium BC, culminating with the defeat of the Persians by Alexander the Macedonian in 331 BC. Greek records contain much information about these Persians and their lands, which roughly paralleled today's Iran. Judging by the names of their kings, Cyrus, Darius, Xerxes, and the names of their deities, which appear to belong to the Indo-European linguistic stem, scholars reached the conclusion that they were part of the Aryan lordly people that appeared from somewhere near the Caspian Sea toward the end of the 2nd millennium BC and spread westward to Asia Minor, eastward to India, and southward to what the Old Testament called the lands of the Medes and Parsis. Yet all was not that simple. In spite of the assured foreign origin of these invaders, the Old Testament treated them as part and parcel of biblical events. Cyrus, for example, was considered to be an anointment of Yahweh, quite an unusual relationship between the Hebrew God and a non-Hebrew. According to the biblical book of Ursa, Cyrus acknowledged his mission to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem and stated that he was acting upon orders given by Yahweh, whom he called God of Heaven. Cyrus and the other kings of his dynasty called themselves Achaemenids after the title adopted by the founder of the dynasty, which was Hachamanish, Semitic title which meant wise man. By and large, scholars have neglected to investigate the many leads that may point to similarities between the Hebrew god Yahweh and the deity the Achaemenids called the Wise Lord, whom they described as hovering in the skies within a winged globe, as shown on the royal seal of Darius. It has been established by now that the cultural, religious, and historic roots of these old Persians go back to the earlier empires of Babylon and Assyria, whose extent and fall is recorded in the Old Testament. As efforts began to decipher the Achaemenid inscriptions, it became clear that they were written in the same script as inscriptions found on ancient artifacts and tablets in Mesopotamia. Astounded by increasingly frequent corroboration of the biblical narratives by archaeological finds, the Assyriologists, as these scholars came to be called, turned to the 10th chapter of the book of Genesis. There, Nimrod, a mighty hunter by the grace of Yahweh, was described as the founder of all the kingdoms of Mesopotamia. and the beginning of his kingdom, Babel, and Erech, and Akkad, all in the land of Sinar. The ruins of Mesopotamia have provided conclusive evidence that once upon a time there indeed existed a kingdom by the name of Akkad, established by a much earlier ruler who called himself Ashura King, meaning righteous ruler. He claimed in his inscriptions that his empire stretched by the grace of his god Enlil from the lower sea, the Persian Gulf, to the upper sea, believed to be the Mediterranean. He boasted that at the wharf of Akkad he made more ships from many distant lands. The scholars stood in awe. They had come upon a Mesopotamian empire in the 3rd millennium BC. There was a leap backward of some 2,000 years from the Assyrian Sargon of Dur Sharrukin to Sargon of Akkad, and yet the mounds that were dug up brought to light literature and art, science and politics, commerce and communications, a full-fledged civilization long before the appearance of Babylonia and Assyria. Moreover, it was obviously the predecessor and the source of the later Mesopotamian civilizations. Assyria and Babylonia were only branches of the Akkadian trunk. The mystery of such an early Mesopotamian civilization deepened. However, as inscriptions recording the achievements and genealogy of Sargon of Akkad were found, they stated that his full title was King of Akkad, King of Kish. They explained that before he assumed the throne, he had been a counselor to the rulers of Kish. Was there then, the scholars asked themselves, an even earlier kingdom, that of Kish, which preceded Akkad? Once again, the biblical verses gained in significance. And Cush begot Nimrod, he was first to be a hero in the land, and the beginning of his kingdom, Babel, and Erech, and Akkad. Many scholars have speculated that Sargon of Akkad was the biblical Nimrod. If one reads Kish or Cush in the above biblical verses, it would seem Nimrod was indeed preceded by Kish, as claimed by Sargon. The scholars then began to accept literally the rest of his inscriptions. He defeated Uruk and tore down its wall. He was victorious in a battle with the inhabitants of Ur. He defeated the entire territory from Lagash as far as the sea. Was the biblical Erech identical with the Uruk of Sargon's inscriptions? As the site now called Warka was unearthed, that was found to be the case, and the Ur referred to by Sargon was none other than the biblical Ur, the Mesopotamian birthplace of Abraham. Not only did the archaeological discoveries vindicate the biblical records, it also appeared certain that there must have been kingdoms and cities and civilizations in Mesopotamia even before the 3rd millennium BC. The only question was, how far back did one have to go to find the first civilized kingdom? In 1919, H.R. Hall came upon ancient ruins at a village now called El Obeid. The site gave its name to what scholars now consider the first phase of the Great Sumerian Civilization. Sumerian cities of that period, ranging from northern Mesopotamia to the southern Zagros foothills, produced the first use of clay bricks, plastered walls, mosaic decorations, cemeteries with brick-lined graves, painted and decorated ceramic wares with geometric designs, copper mirrors, beads of imported turquoise, paint for eyelids, copper-headed tomahawks, cloth, houses, and above all, monumental temple buildings. Farther south, the archaeologists found Eridu, the first Sumerian city according to the ancient texts. As the excavators dug deeper, they came upon a temple dedicated to Enki, Sumer's god of knowledge, which appeared to have been built and rebuilt many times over. The strata clearly led the scholars back to the beginnings of Sumerian civilization. 2500 BC, 2800 BC, 3000 BC, 3500 BC. Then the spades came upon the foundations of the first temple dedicated to Enki. Below that, there was virgin soil. Nothing had been built before. The time was circa 3800 BC. that is when civilization began. It was not only the first civilization in the true sense of the term, it was a most extensive civilization, all-encompassing, in many ways more advanced than the other civilizations that had followed it. It was undoubtedly the civilization on which ours is based. Having begun to use stones as tools some 2 million years earlier, man achieved this unprecedented civilization in summer, circa 3800 BC. And the perplexing fact about this is that to this very day, the scholars have no inkling who the Sumerians were, where they came from, and how and why their civilization appeared, for its appearance was sudden, unexpected, and out of nowhere. Over the years, Zachariah Sitchin has often been asked to speak at various conferences. In January 1992, he spoke at the UFO conference at the site of the Great Pyramid in Giza, in Egypt. In this talk, he explained how his interest in what would become his lifelong passion began. He explains how early on he learned to forge a trail of discovery that would further solidify the development of his theories about the Anunnaki, the ancient visitors who came to Earth roughly 445,000 years ago and, in doing so, changed the course of human evolution. Please note that this is a condensed version of Chapter 2 within the book. It really is worth reading the full works.
If you would like your own paperback copy of the original work, please check out our affiliate publisher links within the video description. Thanks for watching The Fifth Kind. If you like our videos, please do subscribe. It's free and really does help us a lot. Don't forget to click the bell icon to turn on channel notifications so you never miss a new video.